banning experimentals and flight training from your airport. Can they do that? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Earl Lawrence, who is the Experimental Aircraft Association's Vice President for Industry and Regulatory Affairs. We're here today to talk about a story that I thought, frankly, would go away almost immediately, and yet it's still here, and it's kind of chilling if it ever does really take root, and that is, in North Las Vegas, Nevada, there was an experimental aircraft accident, which apparently was the last straw for one politician who decided to push for a ban on experimentals being able to operate in congested airspace or even be based at airports in populated areas. Earl, thanks very much for taking some time out to join us today.
It's my pleasure to do so. And unfortunately, it's actually even worse than you described. The county board there in Clark County, which where Las Vegas is actually voted to take on what they say call high risk operations. And in the mind of the airport manager, it's already been expressed that that includes flight training, low time pilots, experimental aircraft. It's a range of many things, and it's a real concern. If this was given as a precedent, there's airports that, for example, don't want business jets. Mm-hmm. So you could see if you left up to the airport manager to decide what operations would be allowed at an airport, this would be a huge concern for us at a national level.
Well, let's talk about this particular situation first, and then move on to the larger implications. But this particular county director of aviation, Randall Walker, do we have an idea what this fellow's background is, what his perspective might be on this?
The only thing I can share about his background in this is there has been a high rate, which seems maybe a little higher than normal, of accidents and incidences surrounding several of the Clark County airports, and North Las Vegas being one of them. As you mentioned, there was an experimental accident that unfortunately had a fatality on the ground. And when that happens, obviously it gets additional attention. But even, more disturbingly is literally just a few weeks after that accident, there was a type certified aircraft, ended up in homes at the end of the runway, at the airport just a few weeks later, furthering the concern about operations in the area. And it's, one of those typical things where houses build up around. The airport moved out there to get away from it all, and then there's a lot of operation, housing and development that comes in around it. But really, the core issue is what's going on and why is a few more accidents occurring at the airport. And as opposed to having the manager really, in our opinion, work with the FBOs, work with the flight schools there, work with the operators there to explore it and to work with the FAA, it seems to be that he's decided that he needs to have special authority really over the FAA, over the agency responsible for the safety of the system. Because he knows better, and that's a big concern.
Well, now this obviously the big risk in this is that he has appealed to some people he thinks will be sympathetic in Congress, and unfortunately we have seen some cases in which the FAA has buckled in the past to pressure from Congress, even when it was clearly a case where if the people pushing for a particular initiative had been more educated on that issue, they might have seen where this was not a long-term positive direction to go. Is this even a threat? I mean, this was August 22nd that this experimental accident happened, and yet I still see it making headlines.
Absolutely. It is still a threat, and you hit the key thing. It's education, and we're all over this, and not just EAA, all the associations out there, because when you start making these kind of requests of Congress, it gets everybody's attention. We can't have a patchwork out there, and the key to this is us getting up on the Hill and educating our elected officials, and particularly educating the Nevada delegation so they understand the impact that this would have negatively on safety throughout the country, if we were to change the system as it is now, and this is on top of action that was already taken. I mean, when the accident occurred with the experimental aircraft, EAA was in touch with the House Aviation Subcommittee staff immediately, where we were providing materials and information that they were providing to the Nevada delegation, as well as other members of the House Aviation Subcommittee. So that they had an understanding. You know, we got out in front of it immediately. But as you said, the local authorities are continuing on an effort here, and we believe it's because they really don't understand how the safety network works and how important it is to leave it the way it is and to sit down with the FAA and work out what might be an individual safety concern in the Las Vegas area.
Well, now let's talk for just a moment about the safety of experimental aircraft, because this is going to come up, even though one of these two accidents involved a type certified aircraft. Experimental aircraft, if I understand the statistics correctly, once you get past that 40-hour phase one or 25-hour phase one, as the case may be, period that's defined in the operating limitations, experimental aircraft don't necessarily have a safety record much different from certificated aircraft.
You're absolutely correct. A large percentage of the accidents still occur in what we call phase one or the test period. And the test period is required to be done in a more remote area and you know, clear of development, so that we can protect people and property on the ground. And to really put in perspective, and this is what we use when we're dealing with the general public, even including the test flying periods, in our safety record, experimental aircraft are not as safe as cars, but safer than motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of puts it into that perspective. There's risk in anything that we do. There's risk in getting on a horse and falling off and breaking your neck. Okay, things can happen. We're not saying there's no risk, but to put it in perspective, you know, for those who are concerned about this, they may not realize that flying an experimental aircraft is safer than getting on a motorcycle. And, you know, that's a good perspective for people to look at. And as you said, when you remove the test flying period, our safety record is very close and very comparable to the rest of standard category aircraft. But part of the problem and the blur over these years is that there's less and less of a division. 20% of the single-engine fleet are amateur-built aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so 20% of the accidents in the Las Vegas area have not been experimental accidents, which is kind of interesting when they look at it. The vast majority of them have been in type certified aircraft. So if you look at it that way, the experimental aircraft have actually been safer.
I think what I'd like to talk about when we come back from the break briefly is some things that we could do as individuals involved in experimental aircraft to maybe further our own cause or at least quit setting ourselves back. My guest is Earl Lawrence, who is the Vice President for Industry and Regulatory Affairs of the Experimental Aircraft Association. I'm Paul Flack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied?
Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Black. My guest today is Earl Lawrence, who is the VP for Industry and Regulatory Affairs for the Experimental Aircraft Association. We're talking today about the issues surrounding Nevada's Clark County Board of Commissioners and their approval of a resolution calling on the state's congressional delegation to introduce a law that would essentially remove federal authority over the nation's civilian airspace. This comes in the wake of two accidents in a very short period of time at the North Las Vegas airport, one of them involving an experimental aircraft. Earl, we talked before the break about the safety record of experimentals, especially once you get outside that test phase. I have to observe that we kind of shot ourselves in the foot a little bit in this case, because we had a pilot here who apparently was not operating within the operating limitations, who was had authorization to come in and out of the airport but not linger, and decided to do some testing in the pattern.
Right. Well, again, I don't know the exact details, and that's certainly something that is being investigated and is still under investigation. But it is you bring up a concern. Let me build on that a little bit more. Even if it was out of the test period, it's our understanding there was a major change made to the aircraft. There was a major work done to the engine. There was a configuration change. And any time you do major work to an aircraft, and especially an experimental aircraft, you're supposed to revert back to your phase one operating limitations and do that testing in an approved test area.
Okay, now, there's obviously going to be a paradox there, because in order to do work on your aircraft or get it the attention it needs sometimes from qualified individuals, you're going to need to either get them to where your aircraft is, which could be cost prohibitive or just not something that they'll do, or take your aircraft someplace where they're based. This sounds like it may have been one of those cases.
It may have been. That's always a challenge, but that is one of the prices that we have to pay for the operation of experimental aircraft. That's the situation that we're involved in.
We essentially have the right under the law to develop experimental aircraft. We don't necessarily have the right for it to be cheap or convenient.
You're absolutely correct there. And, we have a tremendous amount of privileges. And if you look back in the years that experimental aircraft, amateur-built aircraft particularly, not that long ago, people don't understand, it wasn't until 1996 that we actually received the written authorization to fly over a densely populated area for the purposes of takeoffs and landings.
Mm-hmm.
People have been doing that. But if you look at where we were restricted to and what our privileges were over the years, they were very limited. And we've grown by proving ourselves and having a safe safety record and doing a good job of that. And you're, like you're saying, this is being highlighted. We're being hurt in this case because of an accident that it is being questioned, just whether it really should have been operating there in the first place.
Well, and I guess that brings me around to defining what kinds of operations really are high risk, because before I ever took my first ground school class a few years ago, I spent the better part of a year, and friends thought it was kind of morbid, reading accident reports. I really wanted to understand what it is that happens when planes go down. And it's almost never the hardware, frankly.
Yeah.
And so if we're going to talk about the things that really represent risks, I see, momentary lapses of pilot judgment as being a much bigger issue than anything to do with the hardware.
Absolutely. We see that in the accident statistics across the board and type certified and experimental aircraft. But by far, the biggest area is decision making. And that's a hard thing to deal with. And what you were doing by reviewing the accident records, we're learning from that and altering your decision making pattern so that you can learn from those experiences. And, that's a wonderful thing to do. As you said, it may sound a little bit morbid, but that's one way we can all help each other to operate a little bit more safely and operate well within the envelope of safety. Not really try to extend things to an extent that gets us all in trouble. And these are the decisions we all make along the way, and we got to think about that effect, the effect of the decisions we make on others who operate aircraft too.
You've talked about the loosening of operating limitations on experimental aircraft over the years, and I had to laugh when you brought that up, because I recently read a posting on an internet forum by a guy who has a Benson gyrocopter that was built in 1975 and got its airworthiness certificate, and its operating limitations said no turns for the first 20 hours. So that kind of shows how far we've come in terms of demonstrating, what we can do and what we can be responsible for. After all this moving forward, What are the chances of this law that would move us backwards succeeding? And is there anything that EAA wants us to do about this?
Well, I would hope that the chances of this law moving forward are small, but only because the associations that represent flyers, all the associations, are taking action. You know, we need your support. You're asking, what can you do? You know, support EAA, support AOPA, support MBAA, all, you know, all of the organizations that are out there looking out for you, because it's our presence of constant presence with the elected officials and touching base with them to make sure that they have the information to make the right decisions. You know, I think the likelihood that such a law will be passed is small, as I said, only because of the support that we receive from all of our members out there. And at this point, I don't think there's a particular action, writing your congressman or anything like that, that we're looking for. We're just saying support the organizations that you support out there so that we have the resources to, you know, be meeting with all the elected officials and providing the right information.
Well, and I guess we might add to that that obviously if we're under scrutiny, especially at a time when we're under extra scrutiny, whatever we do personally has a chance to impact this activity, this whole field of human activity in general, and make sure we lead by a good example.
Absolutely.
Well, Earl, we appreciate your taking some time out. Good luck on this particular issue. We really appreciate EAA's advocacy, and go get them.
All right. Thank you.
My guest has been Earl Lawrence, who is the Vice President for Industry and Regulatory Affairs for the Experimental Aircraft Association. You can find out more about this particular story and about EAA in general at www.eaa.org. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.